This is the Mercedes Lucky Benedict Show, coming to you live on Web Radio Network. Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us here at the Mercedes Lucky Benedict Show. And we are back. The fall has come and the show is back on. So I am looking forward to sharing some amazing people, authors, you know, just all kinds of people that I think are awesome. So one we have particular tonight, I met at the Tucson Paracon recently when I was a guest at this Paracon, a speaker. So this woman who I'm about to share with you was so incredible on the stage. And when you look at her list of books that she's written, and I'll just say a few right now, I see like 10 here. Let's say we've got Dining with the Dead, Haunted Phoenix, Sleeping with Ghosts, Haunted Globe, Grand Canyon Ghost Stories, the Arizona Haunted Route 66. And you know, it just keeps going. There's so many books that she's written. And so I'm going to do the drum roll. That's not the best drum roll, but hello to Debbie Branning. Hi, Debbie.
Hello, hello.
It is so great.
The weather is getting nice. It's just great evening.
I know. I don't even have my air conditioner on right now in my haunted cabin where I actually do these shows at. So, yeah, I'm like sitting here. I'm like, no AC on. And you're in Phoenix, right?
Yes. Huh? Up in Mesa.
Oh, in Mesa. So you're actually in the much warmer than we are over where you're at.
Right, right. It's always a little cooler down in the Tucson area. So,
yeah, it definitely is. And but so when you came to, you know, it's just really amazing when I was looking at more of your information. So I came across that you're the Ghost Chasers, the MVD Ghost Chasers, and you're the director since 1994, and that is within the Mesa and Bisbee. You're the that Mesa Bisbee area. Now, right. I didn't realize that Mesa and Bisbee would be so connected, though. Would they?
Well, they're not really connected, but I have homes in both places. So I have a team, you know, my main team's up in the, you know, Mesa, Phoenix area. And then the little extra special team is down there in Bisbee because I was down there a lot. So we kind of started up a smaller group down there. So we kind of handle Cochise County as well.
Wow. I did not know that. So that, you know, and what's fascinating is, you know, I love all the historical information that your books, a lot of them are about historical information. So I absolutely love that. And that's something I'm working on myself with hauntings here and in the history. So I'd like to talk to you about that in a little bit. But first, let's, I don't even know where to start. There's so many good things here. It's like,
I've been around a long time, so it's pretty crazy, but you know, just kind of like people go like, what does MVD stand for? Well, I worked for 25 years at the motor vehicle department, you know, where you get your driver's license and all that. That's where our team originated, because there was a bunch of us that we, coworkers, and we had all interested in the paranormal. So we started up our team, back then, and we started going to haunted historic places, all over. And so, a lot of them must have retired or moved on or quit. And so now the team is more open to other folks as well. It's not just all MBD agents anymore. But that's
Oh.
where it originated from. So, that's what that means. I like to see, say it's moving vortex detectors, but no, it's part of my whole department.
I mean, I thought, I'm like, I know what that stands for, but I didn't have any clue that it was actually, that's what you guys were all grouped. Wow. Well,
Crazy, huh?
and that is amazing. And so do you still live in Bisbee or have a home there still?
I still have a home in Bisbee, but most of the time I'm up in the Mesa area. But I
Wow.
do try to get down to Bisbee once a month or every other month and spend a few days down there as well. But yeah, it's
I
nice to
love
have a little getaway home down there.
I think it's great if you can have two. I would like to be a snowbird personally one of these days. So I think that would be great. So when did I've seen you on stage, and so I loved what you did and how you brought in like we were just talking about that, Stan and Teresa and I, the producers, about so well the water witching is what they
The
call it. But
dowsing, dowsing
and
in
so
it.
yeah so but I think they used to call it witching, well witching,
A lot of people,
but the
well, they would call
dowsing.
it, witching sticks or divining rods, whatever. But I got started doing dowsings because I was doing an event down in the Tombstone area. And I had a lady that was interested in the event, but she was living in Missouri, but she had a daughter in Phoenix, so she was going to be in Phoenix when we did the event. So she contacted me and wanted to meet me first, need to make sure I wasn't some crazy person. And so she says, I want to teach you how to do dowsing. And I said, okay. So she says, I'm going to take you up to up by Prescott area, up to Mayer, Arizona, because I used to live up there and I know some places to go. So, like any other crazy person, I just get in the car with this person I never met, and off we went to learn how to go dowsing. And I guess, when we got up to this place, she knew where there's a little ghost town. There was nothing there, but she says, there's a cemetery here. We're going to find it. And we're going to map out the cemetery. She says, I do a lot of that in Missouri, so I'm going to teach you how to do that. So that was my first experience dowsing. And, basically, she told me, bring two coat hangers, and we're going to make rods for you. And so that's what we did. I brought, a couple coat hangers up. She showed me how to bend them, how to do yes, no. And it was crazy. I mean, the first time I held, dowsing rods and learned, how they worked. And basically, dowsing is yes, no, and dummy. It's not gonna give you names or anything. And but it can be used so many ways. You just like hunting for the water and the wells, locating gemstones and minerals and different kind of stones. And talking to spirits, yes and no questions, and crazy things. So then I was like, okay, you have to learn how to, work with the rods. So I developed this class I used to do for like South Mountain Community College and a few other places. And it's basic, dowsing. And it's just learning the rods and, making the rod your own or pendulum. I do both. And it just got crazy because all now I like even the last week because I'm teaching a class up in Globe on Friday night,
Okay.
on the dowsing, and so I always have to come up with new ways to learn because, it gets boring doing the same old gimmick. I always ever say it's kind of my dowsing circus act because I get people up on stage and they participate with me, and.
Right.
And that's what's really fun because then they can see that it's not me just waving the wet wands around or dangling the pendulum. It actually can work. And I always tell, when you get your pendulums and you get your dowsing rods, make them your own. And I have a couple rods I use and a couple pendulums I use for other people to use out there. But I was telling you, your dowsing rods are like your toothbrush. You don't let other people use your toothbrush. You don't want them to use your dowsing rods because you want your energy to build up in the rods. And I take them out every time there's like a full moon or a new moon, and I have a, a little altar table that I lay everything out there and charge up the energy in them, and then I pack them back up again. And then if I have, one like the class that I'm going to be doing Friday night, and I do have other people touching them right away, I take them and I, wipe them down, repack them, and then I'll put them out again under the moon and charge them back up again because someone else's energy had gotten in there and I want it to be my pure energy. And, we just do a lot of little drills when we do the class to kind of build up that. I was seeing, remember the old Kreskin's ESP game that was out in the 60s. I know my mom had one of those, and I just thought it was like so cool. And you laid out the cards, and then you had, you try to figure out which card, had the Queen of Hearts on it, whatever. And it was all, kind of like, developing that ESP that goes in the cards. And I think that has a lot as well with the dowsing rods or the pendulums, because you're being your energy into the rods, and you're working with spirit energies from somewhere else. It's kind of a team effort between the spirits and you to make the rods work. And I do a lot of cemetery preservation work. And so one of the things when we're out there working in the cemetery, sometimes we, kind of know where a grave marker is, but it might not be spot on, so we'll use the rods to make sure we're in the right area, that there is a burial there. Now, I mean, we can't tell who's actually buried there, but I can tell you if it's male or female, or if it's an adult person or maybe a child, just by the age, or a youth, just by the size of where the rods are going to go over and measure. And then you can, and I do, that's one of the things I like to do. I like to put a bunch of people, lay them on the floor with my pretend cemetery, and then I can show how when you cross over a body, the rods will cross. When you move off the body, they open up, and you move over the body, the rods will cross again. And so it's just kind of a lot of fun. And I always throw a little gimmick in there in case, what if the mortician, buried the body the wrong way in the ground, in the coffin, they buried it wrong, because everybody's, usually you're facing the east in most parts of the country, but sometimes they get the wrong way. But there's other surefire ways we can take the rod or pendulum, and it'll circle. And if it's going clockwise, it's a male. If it's going counterclockwise, it's a female. And it's just that, well, actually, our bodies all contain like water, so it's just kind of like, honey the well. You can tell, by what our systems are made of, whether it's male or female. And then we look for missing objects. I use it to find things, that I'm always losing the keys, or one time I lost one of my pendulums for almost a year, and I would, get my rods out, I'd get my other pendulums out, and look for this pendulum, and it kept pointing to this one area of in my living room, where there was a chair. And I would pull out the chairs, and I'd look under the chairs, I would tip the chairs over, and I'm not finding it. And so then one day I thought, I'm just gonna go with the rods, I'm gonna go with the pendulum tells me, and I'm gonna find this pendulum that I've been missing, because it was my favorite one. And so finally one day I just went out there and I says, you gotta, I know it's in this room, and I know it's in this area. Help me find it. And it kept pointing to this back of this chair, back of the chair. It was like, one of those easy boy chairs that, when they raise back, it has kind of the material in the back that opens up. The pendulum had fallen down in there.
Oh
And
my.
finally, and that's why I kept pointing to this chair all the time. So finally, I just thought, I got a flashlight out and I'm shining it down there. And there it was. It was down in this chair for, probably, 5, 6 months that I've been looking for it. And if I would have listened to what the pendulums and the dowsing rods were telling me in the beginning, I would have found it a lot earlier. But yeah, that's, some of the cool things they can help you do. They used them in wars, when they used to have I think it was like the Germans would put the mines in the grounds, and the soldiers would go out there, and they'd have to go in the minefields and find so the troops could move. And they used to use dowsing rods to locate some of these mines, so they knew where they were in the ground, so people wouldn't step on them and blow themselves up. So they've been used in wars. They've been used in, like I said, for water and cemeteries and just about everything. I know a lot of folks that do. They work in the mines just to find locations of the minerals they're looking for. Sometimes they'll have like rods in their truck, and they'll pull them out just for, okay, we're gonna find, where this silver is buried here, because the rods will point the way. So it's just they're just interesting to work with. And then like I said too, a lot of people use them when they are out doing paranormal investigations, and they'll call in the spirit, and they'll ask yes or no questions. Are you a male or female? Are you male? And then it'll go yes or no, or female, yes or no. Like I said, they're not going to say male or female, but they will say yes or no. And all kinds of things like that. Then like you can actually have little charts made up. I know a lot of my friends I know have little charts, and you can have the alphabet on them. And then if you have your pendulum, you can start going, can you spell, what's your name? What's the first letter of your name? And then put that over the chart, and it'll go to, like, say, B for Betty. And then it'll go, over to E for, Betty, and T, and you can spell it out that way. So there, it's good in that way. And that aspect is true. It's just a lot of fun to do dowsing. I always have enjoyed it, and it's fun to like I said, I do put up my little circus act and get the people on the stage, and have them help me with some of the things, like finding objects. Or they were one of the things, they write their name on a card and lay the card like on a index card, and then I have other index cards. I lay them out, and then I have them think about your card, and then go over it with the rods. I go and find your card, and they'll go over each card and then locate the one what they actually wrote on. And so that's just kind of like I said, it's kind of ESP, working with the rods and working with the pendulums and working with spirit world. Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, it was neat to see what you did up on, and that was a huge stage, the
I
full stage.
know, it was a big stage in a big auditorium. It was kind of cool. And it was like, okay, halfway through the thing, I thought it was about three quarters, all of a sudden the lights all started flickering in there. And I thought, are they giving me the signal that, my time's almost up? Okay, you got like 5 minutes left. And I'm thinking that was the thing. And I'm looking around, and they're like, no, keep going. And then they're going, we don't know what was going on, but halfway towards the end, your lights start flickering. I'm like, I guess I was making contact with somebody up there, that enjoyed it or didn't enjoy it. I don't know, but it was kind of odd. I just remember that, thinking, oh, they're giving me the signal to kind of like, cut it up. And like, no, keep going. So that was kind of cool, that was happening. And I just felt like, okay, I made contact with some spirits in there, because it's a very haunted theater. So that was very cool being in there.
Yeah, I'm surprised you probably need to write a book on that place or that. Well, I know the other guy, I've had him on the he that wrote a book.
Yeah, he did Haunted Tucson, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So Daryl.
Yeah.
So that he is so great. So it was really neat to find both of you in this place. So tell me a little bit about when did you start writing? When did that start for you?
I wrote my first story when I was in first grade. It was called Sammy the Cookie. And I knew then that someday I wanted to be a writer. And so I always was writing little, plays for my neighborhood, and I would write, short stories. And then from doing all these paranormal investigations throughout the years, I decided, and then, it was kind of the reason I did it was because everybody started getting to that thing where, like, it was their turf. Like, you can't come to this place because I investigate there. Or you can't, go here, and you can't tell that story because that's my story. And I thought, I've been doing this way before them, and I have lots of stories. And I would, a good paranormal investigator keeps, you know, files and charts of all the investigations we've done. So I started going through all my files and you know, all my research, and I thought, I'm going to write a book on all these things and then share it out there. Then nobody can own the places anymore, you know, because everybody can read about them and everybody can enjoy them. And I started writing for Examiner, which was kind of an online magazine. And I was doing paranormal sites in Arizona and paranormal in the United States. And I would travel all around. It was so much fun being a travel, you know, paranormal and journalist, because I got to, you know, go to all these really cool places for free, because I could do write-ups on, you know, this tour, that haunted place. So it got to be really fun. And then it was like, okay, now I'm sharing it with everybody, so nobody can own one spot anymore, because it's for everybody to enjoy. And that's why I started doing the books. I wrote my first book, it was 20 years ago, it's Sleeping with Ghosts. And that's the one on the haunted hotels and the bed and breakfasts. And that's still my most popular book, even though some of the methods of doing paranormal investigations are outdated. You know, we don't talk about orbs anymore, and you know, and odds and ends, but it's still the most popular book out there that I saw. I saw a bazillion of those, all it, and it's crazy. And but that was the first one, and that was 20 years ago when that one came out. So then it was just ever since then, I was like, okay. And then I did the restaurants, and then I did the cemeteries, and then a publisher wanted me to do one on the Grand Canyon. And boy, that was a tough one, because there were not many ghost stories out there about the Grand Canyon. So then that mean I was contacting the river runners, the mule run, you know, guys that did the mules, hikers, you know, park rangers. I mean, then I went to up to all the hotels and businesses and stopped at everywhere and got stories. So that one at the end was like, oh my gosh, there are ghosts up here. And it was really interesting to learn about that. And you know, I'm just a big history buff, so when I do, you know, do my stories, I do a lot of research. I read a lot of old newspapers. I mean, I'm working on one right now on it's called Arizona's Tri-Cities, and that would be Tempe, Mesa, and Chandler, which back in the olden days we had something that was called Tri-City Mall. And so I'm just kind of basing it on those three cities. So it's taken a lot, you know, going back, reading old newspapers on some of these tales, and getting out all my notes again from places that we investigated in this area and putting it together. But it's, you know, you got to do your research, because, you know, everybody can, you know, backpedal and go like, you know, why you that's, you know, you made up that story, you know, that didn't really happen like that, because I've read, you know, the articles. So I read a lot of, you know, read a lot of death certificates. I read a lot of, I go on Ancestry a lot. And then I kind of go down a rabbit hole, because when I'm in, like, learning about a person, pretty soon I'm like, you know, I know all about their children and their brothers, the sisters, their parents. And I'm like, wait a minute, wait a minute, just stop. You know, nobody cares. You know, just go to the one you're working on. And but it's kind of cool though that you have all this these ways to research things now. So that's always fun for me to go in and read old newspapers, and you just plug in their name and see if they're, you know, something crazy has happened to them in their lives or their businesses. And that's how I get a lot of the stories. It's just basically, you know, reading old newspapers and doing research on history. And I do a walking tour once a month. We're doing it a couple times, maybe three times, I think, in October, with the hip historian Marshall Shore. And we do a historic haunted tour of Phoenix. So that means we're telling the history of a lot of old buildings downtown Phoenix, and we throw in some of the unexplained stories or ghostly stories about these buildings and about things that have happened in the buildings. So you're getting a little bit of history, a little mystery, putting hand in hand together. And it's really cool there, because when it's a 2 mile walk, we do, takes us 2 hours to do it. And you know, you can touch the buildings when you come to one of the haunted locations, rather than being in the bus and driving by, and by the time you realize, you know, oh, it's that building. Oh, it's back there. We already passed it. So this way, you know, we've actually stand for the building, talk about the story. People can, you know, sometimes we get to go in some of the buildings that we kept, you know, hit the timing right and things like that. But it's been a lot of fun because, again, we've done a lot of research on the history of the buildings and history of the tales of the ghosts that are said to be there. So that's been a lot of fun doing. We've been doing that tour for about 10 years. We did it by bus for probably the first 5 years. And then ever since COVID, we've been doing the walking tour. And we found we enjoy that a lot more because, like I said, you can actually look at the building rather than just pass it by. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that's what Becky does here. And
Yeah.
where you meet her in Phoenix, Becky McKitty, but in Bisbee, because I know she like doing something in Bisbee, and I think back in the day. Not sure.
I think she purchased the tour from the gal who owned it, and the gal owned it in Bisbee, and then she had one going in Tucson, and Becky bought it from her and took it over. So she so yeah. So yeah, it's fun to do walking tour. I enjoy it. I like that's usually when I travel. You know, I like to stay at a haunted place. We eat at the haunted restaurants, and then we look for tours. And we love to go on the walking tours because you learn so much. I mean, you don't always get to go ghost hunting per se, but you learn enough. So if you really like the place, you can go back and do your own investigation at some point. So.
I really like that you said like that you because I about going and getting to do the interviews and then traveling. That sounds like so much fun. That's what.
That was a riot. I went on one tour with a gal one time. She was a writer for AAA, and she got asked to do stories on the restaurants at some of the haunted hotels of the Rockies. And so she asked me to go along with her. We were on the road for 9 days. We started in Phoenix, and we went up through New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, South Dakota, Montana, and we stopped and stayed at all these historic hotels, and we were their guests, so we didn't have to pay any hotels. I mean, we excuse me, they gave us, of course, you know, free breakfast in the morning and usually some place, you know, for dinner. And so only thing we ever bought, we had a cooler, we eat lunch on the road, and we'd go on the next place. And that was probably my most favorite road trip ever because we've seen so much history and stayed at such cool places and, you know, talked to such interesting people. And I think about that trip all the time. We also got invited to go to Biloxi, and then we went to Salem. They invited us, and we went to one other location. I can't remember, but we were going on these little road trips all the time, and it was like really fun, and you know, getting free room and board, and learning all these places and doing all the history. And then I'd come home and I'd do stories on the haunted things, and she would do stories on the restaurants, and you know, it was a really fun time.
Wow, that is neat. And so, when did you start becoming an actress? I was looking at your IMDb.
I am a background extra. That means sometimes you see me and sometimes you don't. Sometimes I'm a blur. Sometimes there's a crowd of people and there's like this little dot in the back, and I'm like, see the one with the pink hat? That's me. And you know, it's like, but it's fun. It's fun watching the process. And I love the most of the time I love doing the old Western movies the best. I every once in a while I'll do a modern day, you know, a little blurb or something, but the old West, I love putting on the costuming and like I said, most of the time you see me like just a little blurb of me some here and there. I'm walking by or walking down the boardwalk, and you know, so it's always fun, you know, because you know my family watches them and they're like, okay, here goes my part, and I'm like, I didn't see you. I go, yeah, you saw that lady, you know, the you know, from the behind, you know. You must have recognized my big butt. And they're like, oh my God. Now we watched that whole movie just to see that. But yeah, that's it. I don't have ever have any speaking lines. It's just fun. It's just for fun.
About Skinwalker. That one looks different. Like it said that you were actually playing L.
Yeah, skin in Skinwalker, I think I was a lady at the train station, and then you see me on sitting in on a train, you know. That's me. I think you see my arm on the train, and you see me, and there was a gentleman. We were walking through the train station, but like I said, it was
Okay.
fun. And you know, there was another one I did where Eminence Hill, and I was a person in this crazy old West town, and you see me sitting in a pew for like a jury trial, and then you see me again. Where else was I? Oh, in the town I was standing around when they were murdering somebody. It was just like, you know, you still see me in the background. Right now we're working on one up in Globe, and it's called The Dog Bite Murders, and this is a true story that happened about murders that happened in Globe in about 1910, and it involved two gentlemen who robbed two hunters. And you know, people go, it was this movie about a bunch of dogs that, you know, killed people. I'm like, oh no. What happened was these four gentlemen were having, you know, probably sitting around, you know, playing cards, and one of the hunters accidentally stepped on the dog's tail. The dog, you know, nipped him like dogs would, you know, and the hunter kicked the dog, and therefore it kind of made the owner of the dog angry. So during, and then, you know, course of the weekend, I believe, you know, the two hunters were murdered, and so it was this whole, you know, chase through the Globe area. And these two men were brought to justice. We spent 4 days down in Florence in one of the old courthouses doing the trial. And so back, so you'll, 'cause you can see me sitting in the back of the courtroom with my big hat on. And then we did a modern day, well, not modern, it was 1950s scene that was supposed to be up in Whiskey Row in Prescott. And I'm just sitting in a saloon, you know, with a date. And we're talking as, you know, all the action's going on behind us. And this weekend, I'm really looking forward to this. We're going to do the hangings of those two murderers. So once again, I'll be standing around watching a hanging. So that's going to
Wow.
be really a lot of fun. We're coming to the end of the shoot. So
Oh.
we're doing one hanging in the morning, and then we have lunch, and then we're doing the second hanging in the afternoon. So it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be fun but sad because it's the end of the shoot. But
Yeah.
they've been working on that up there for probably 2 months now, and it's gonna be a really good movie. The director and film maker is excellent on his lighting and the whole production. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. Well, yeah, I think that'll be out next summer. But
Well,
yeah,
is
that
that,
one's been fun.
do you have like an agent in Phoenix that helps you get these?
No. I have friends that, you know, they go, oh, we're doing a movie. You want to like stand around? I'm like, okay. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have an agent because I don't get paid. You know, it's like I said, we do it all volunteer. And you know, we get lunch. Sometimes we get a DVD of the movie, but it's just fun. It's just a fun thing to do. You know, it's just kind of a little hobby thing. You know, it's not like I want to be an actress or anything, but every once in a while, I'll see a story that sounds really good, and I'll go, yeah, I'll be back. I'll do background in this. You know, like I said, but you know, background actors are usually free.
Yeah,
You don't
that's
need
well.
any agent. You just start hearing like, from a friend of a friend. Yeah, I'm gonna go up, and they need background people. You want to come? And okay, I'll do it. Yeah. If I don't have something else going on, I'll do it. A lot of times, you know, things will come up, and I'm like, well, I already have something else planned, so I can't do it. But Yeah, this one's been really, really fun, and I've really enjoyed working on this one. It's going to be sad that it's done, but good that it's done, good that it's being
Yeah.
finished. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, and it's kind of weird, like, so now I'm coming back into this kind of work, but that's what I did. So I was a real actress with agents and stuff. So I remember, like, every time you do a show or do these things and you'd say goodbye and it'd be like, oh, look at, you didn't want to say goodbye. You're like a family, you know?
Yeah,
So
it's like, it's like leaving camp, and like, oh, well, I can see you
exactly.
guys again. But a
Yeah.
lot of times now, I've done them for probably the last 4 or 5 years.
Uh-oh.
Start seeing people, and it's tons of fun. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. So,
Yeah, one of the other crazy things I do. I do all kinds of weird things.
I know, I'm just thinking, like, you have such a versatile life. And so, when did it, and did it start? Did you start having dealing with hauntings as a child or things like that?
I think, when I was probably like 10 or 12, I started having, around our neighborhood where I live, grew up in Nebraska, and I would, we'd start seeing weird shadowy things. And so I never thought much of it then. And then my grandmother passed away. I think I was probably about 16. And then after that, I would start hearing her voice. She'd be talking to me, and I would always know because she was from Czechoslovakia. And when she had an accent and everything, so I would always know it was her.
Right.
And so then, she kind of became my spirit guide. And when I had like problems, they always tell you the spirit guides can't solve it for you, but they can kind of point you in the right direction. So I'd always ask, well, can you just kind of show me which way I should do this? And so then when I moved to Arizona probably when I was about 23, 24, I lived in this apartment, and it was near an area where there was some, I would say Native American ruins and stuff. And I one of them kind of like lived in my apartment because I would see him. He was a tall man, and I'd see him standing in the closet. I'd see him like hangers in the closet moving. I would things moving in the house. And if they didn't like who I was dating. I know one time I had a mirror hanging on a wall for probably 10 years, and apparently they didn't like the gentleman I was dating. I was made dinner for this guy, and all of a sudden the mirror just fell off the wall, and that I never that guy never came back. And things like that, it just kind of got kind of and so I thought, okay, there's something to this. And then that's when I kind of starts studying up on the, spirits of Arizona. And then when I was working at the, MVD office, there was just a lot of us that really had an interest in it. And it was about the time when Ghostbusters came out. And so we're thinking, well, if they can do it, we certainly can. So we start going down to the Gadsden Hotel in Douglas, Arizona. And we would go down there like almost every other payday. And it started out, maybe five of us was going down there. And then pretty soon there'd be a few more. And then that one time we'd have like four or five cars, and we'd all be caravanning from Mesa to down to the Gadsden Hotel. And we just started having really a lot of activity there. And from there we just started we loved the history. So we'd go to, various historic places around Arizona. So that's how we kind of got into the field of it then.
So I keep getting the hit to ask you something. Did you ever in your history learnings hear about what occurred with a lot of satanic practices back in the 14th to 17th century when the priests came? There is some history I found about that, and it actually plays out along in our area. So this area, I'm sure it even would go to there. Did you ever hear of anything like that in your research?
I've heard some things down in the Tucson area because that was kind of one of the first places people settle. They don't realize that Tucson has been there way a lot longer than a lot of places around Arizona. And I
Right.
think because of, the priests that were coming from, the different areas in Mexico and Spain and whatever, and then you had the working with the Native American. I think there was kind of a clash in, the, I don't know how you describe it, just the learning process of everything. And I think there was a lot of misconception of what was going on. So yeah, I think there was a lot of, satanic and, as well as just learning about what was right and what was wrong and what was evil and not. I myself have never, ever, 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 ever run into anything satanic or, really, really bad at all. I don't know if we've just been lucky or they're afraid of me. That could be it. I don't know. They're just like, she's a crazy lady. We're just gonna leave her alone. But no, we're very well protected when we go out, and therefore we've never had any problems. I've only taken one spirit home with me one time, and that was a little boy in Bisbee, and I didn't protect myself that day, and he came home with me. And how I saw him was I was looking in a mirror, and I could start seeing another face that was kind of overshadowing my face. And I went, "Oh, I know what happened on that. There's, someone followed me." So I just sent him back. I just kept saying, "You need to go back to Bisbee. That's where you belong. Go, go, go. And you're going to be happy there. That's where you are." And he left after a couple of days, and then I was fine. But I had a really bad headache the whole time that he was around me, but he didn't cause me any harm. I just always believed that he kind of like hitchhiked with me because he just wanted to see what what the world was like now. But I've never run anything myself as being on the dark side ever.
I think what I guess I'm going after here is, like, I know we had that issue. Well, I mean, I didn't know it till the very end, that when it went down like that, but it was, from what I've researched myself and others, is that whatever happened, it was long ago, and it was between these different priests and stuff. So it would, and if you think about it, with all your history research, is, that you've gone, that are close, that are similar to here, because it's the same Arizona. But, like, you have the Native American culture, which the Holcomb, I mean, like, right now I just found that literally, we're I knew it. I knew we were on the land. I knew that they were here, like a whole village. And I finally found the evidence in it online, in a bit, had it verified through the missile silo, which is right like 2 or 3 miles from us. So there, the whole village was on this missile silo. Yeah, if you think about that, so they knew that when they put that missile silo and started
That's
back in,
kind of
they knew
right.
there. So they chose to go ahead and continue. So if you think about, if we go and we go through this history of all these Native Americans and their, and how they feel, and all these spirits and ghosts, and you put them intertwined, it's kind of a smorgasbord of religions and crossing over boundaries and all kinds of things here, blood and so. But basically, that's everywhere. That goes all the way up to where you're at, and on the two homes that you live, So so when you kind of found that, that's never really kind of come up for you, but you did hear of some of it.
I've heard about it. I know I do, like I said, I do a lot of altar work at the old Pioneer Cemetery in downtown Phoenix, which is near the state capitol. And our cemetery is actually built over an old Hohokam village, and there's a cemetery there. So it's like a double whammy. We have the spirits of all these, early pioneers of Phoenix wandering around the cemetery. And then we have a Hohokam, beneath that. So we do, run into a little bit of that once in a while. I know we always encourage when people do tours and things of the cemetery, because we find a lot of pottery on, you know, on the ground still. It washes up every once in a while. We always tell them, don't pick up any pottery. You know, if you find anything, just, you know, what I always do is I'll take the pottery and I'll lay it on one of the grave markers. You know, it's kind of a good luck thing. Well, there was one day I was out there and I found this really, really pretty piece of pottery, and I wanted to take it inside. We have, you know, what's called the Smurthwaite House, which is the house where we do all our research and everything. And I took it in to show everybody, and I said, and I laid it on the dining room table, and I says, oh, because I was cleaning up trash in the cemetery. And I says, you know, look at this, you guys. You know, I'm going to go back out and do some more work. So I went back out the same area I was at, and all of a sudden, I felt somebody kind of push me, and it was a grave that had the fencing around it, the rod, you know, the little rod, you know, iron around it with the little pokey things. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go over, I'm gonna be, you know, stabbed to death with this fence, you know? And I'm gonna be on TV, you know, graveyard lady, you know, killed in the cemetery, you know. And then it's because all because I picked up this little piece of pottery. So all I did though is I happened to fall right in between the two, pieces of rod there. So when I saw that happened, and I kind of like tore my jeans a little bit. I go, okay, I'm done. So I went back in the house, got that little piece of pottery, took it back out there, and put it back in the ground again. I just kind of, took a stick and dug a little bit of dirt, stuck that pottery back in there. Because I think that, the Native Americans were upset that I was going to put that, take that away, and put that back in into the house. So I put it right back where it belonged, and it's like, never again am I going to even take it out of the cemetery. But so we always tell everybody, don't take anything from the ground,
Right.
leave, bury it back under, you know.
Yeah. No, I love talking to you. This is so great. This is great. And I have a feeling that we're probably running out of time. I don't have my
Well,
clock,
I
but
can come back another time.
no.
I have lots of time. I'm retired.
I don't know. I think you'd be great to be in the documentary series I'm doing, because it's going. I think you'd be a perfect person to add into, because a series, so it's, there's plenty of things happening. But I love the things that you know so much about this history of our area, and that's really what I'm really interested in, because I believe that I just exactly what you're saying. I believe that these spirits would like to have a voice,
Yeah, they like to be recognized. They like to be recognized and appreciated of what they've done and what they stand for. And that's why I said, and it's interesting, like when we do, they were doing some work. Our cemetery has like a road that goes in between a main a street, and they were going to put new sewer system in there. So when they start digging up, the old, the cement, the old sewer pipes, they start finding the ruins of the Hohokam village, and the little, the little areas, the pit houses. And so it was so fun, because when I would go to the cemetery, I didn't want to like work in the cemetery. I wanted to sit out there with the people in the excavators, that were out there, digging up the pit houses, and they were documenting everything. They documented everything, any big pieces they took to the museums. Otherwise, they were little pieces. They just buried them back in the ground, and then when they're all done, they just covered it all up. But they had everything documented, and that's how we found out that at the end of that street in that area is where the cemetery was. They actually were finding, the urns and things like that, where they buried people out there, and places where, bodies were burned, as far as their traditions. So it was really kind of cool sitting out there with these, archaeologists that was their job. And I would sit out there and just watch them work and find things. And they go, oh, look, we found this little bowl, and I'd be like, oh, that is so cool. But I thought that, it was really, really fascinating. It was like almost sad that they had to cover it all up, and but that's what they
Right.
do. They just do the research, document, and then they cover everything back up again, which is good, because it goes back to the earth again.
Yeah. So the one I just finished, the series I just finished, they're talking all about that, the mayor and then the archaeologists, and they're talking about, And some people have already called in about it because they're like, you know, that's not quite what happens. I mean, but I think that's, you know, a lot of people are shocked because so much construction, you know. Now, like, I know we've got this little outlet mall that was burial ground. It's completely an outlet mall now, you know. So, but I think, I mean, really, I guess it's better just to have it buried under the ground and leave it alone, you know. But
Well, and that's why I think I have a, my little house in Bisbee. I live right across the road from the Bisbee Cemetery. So, I'm always seeing spirits in my house in there, and I'm thinking, I'm like, they go, "Well, who died in your house?" I go, "I think it's people from the cemetery just passing through, just like, let's go see what's going on over there," because it's not always, some of the spirits are the same, but some of them are not the same. And I'm, like I said, I think we get a lot of, like, just people that kind of wander through, from across the street over to the house. And I, like, my house down there has a little girl, there's a cat. We've seen a gentleman, and I warned my daughter and her friends when they went down there. I go, "Well, you do know the house is haunted. You're probably going to have stuff happen." And they're going, "Oh yeah, sure. You're just that crazy ghost lady." And then pretty soon I'm getting phone calls. "Oh, we just saw, like, this shadow of a man walk down the hallway," and little things like that. Someone got all of their toiletries knocked on the floor, and I'm like, "Well, it might have been the ghost cat. I don't know. I can't tell you." And then there's times when we were sitting, I had a bunch of girls down there, and we saw the cat. I saw the cat walking, and somebody else saw the cat from behind. We heard the little jingle bell, and my front door does have a cat door on it. So, somebody had a cat there at one time, and as maybe it was their cat. I don't know, but it's just weird how they just kind of pass through every once in a while.
Yeah, no, I totally, yeah, they pass through here a lot. I totally understand what, and I don't know, maybe also it has to do with, you know, the, I don't know, just the energy of the land or the people and the places, especially places you're talking about too, you know, right next to a Bisbee, a very haunted area of Bisbee. It's very haunted and a very historic area. So is there anything in particular, you know, one thing we need to say is how can people buy your books?
Okay, well, they're all on Amazon. Just Google Debbie Branning. I always have them at my house, so people message me. I'm always on Facebook several times a day, and just message me, and I can, set them out as well. If they get them on Google, I'll get my royalty down the road sometime. But yeah, I always have them at my house. I do a lot of book signings, and, a lot of events, and I always bring my books along with me. And so
You
I
had the
do
most,
a lot
you had a tremendous amount of books with you that
of.
day. You really
I know.
did.
And I sold almost all of us. Like, "Oh, thank God I don't have to carry it." Because we had to walk 2 blocks to get there. Like, "Thank God we don't have to drag them all back." So it's, we're tired now. And yes, my friend and I was like, and she was like pushing all the books too, so it was kind of fun. And so every once in a while, I'll do a book signing at events, and it's always fun to meet all the people and do books. And yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun. It's fun to share the stories, and I learn new stories, because when I'm talking of, say, even like the Glow Book, they're still giving me stories like, "Oh, I have a story. We had a ghost at our house or our building, growing up." And so I'm always hearing new stories all the time. So it makes it kind of fun, because I never stop, learning about places that are haunted. And so it's always like, "Okay, what am I going to write about next?" I have a book coming out probably in the spring on the haunted schools of Arizona. And that one's been, in the making for a while. So that one's coming out. Then, like, next year, I'll have the one about the Tri-Cities. So then after that, I'm like, maybe I should retire. What am I going to write about? I think I've covered it all. So I'll have to find another subject.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being. I can see you, and I don't know, people can't see, they can just hear us, but Thank you so much for being on tonight.
It was fun. I knew it was going to be fun. I knew we'd have a good conversation. So,
yeah, it's like a fun conversation. So I will just go ahead and say thank you for being here, and thank you to Stan for being our producer, and thank you to all the people listening, all the audience from wherever you are, whether you're hearing this today or you hear it tomorrow. We are so thankful you're listening, and please reach out to Debbie Branning on Facebook. Reach out to me. I would love to communicate with people that are actually listening. And, you know, that way we can know, you know, when you want Debbie back on so we can put her back on. That's what I would think would be really cool. Thank you so much. And I will take you up on that. I would like you to come back, and I'm going to contact you again about something else. So
okay.
I hope you have a beautiful evening.
All and right. Thank you. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
'Thank you so much for joining us here on the show, streaming live on Spreaker and the Web Radio Network. This is the Mercedes Lucky Benedict Show. You can find me on Facebook and YouTube. Please enjoy my music.
Every time that I've ever been knocked down, every time that I've ever gotten back up to face another I let go of my fear and put my pride down. I'm building my castle in heaven, climbing over mountains with lessons I've been given. I'm building my castle in heaven. My castle is not made of mortar or stone. My castle is made from the seeds that I've sown. I'm building castles in heaven. Every challenge, every mistake, every time that I choose faith, I grow strong. I keep moving on and on and on. And I'm building my castle in heaven, I'm climbing over mountains, the lessons I've been given mine. I'm building my castle in heaven. My castle is not made of mortar or stone. My castle is made from the seeds that I've sown. I'm building castles in heaven. Every moment, every day, every word that you say, every step along your way, every turn that you make a mistake. Every good deed that you do, each time that you win, each time that you lose, each time that you walk, you walk in another's shoes. For it is on this earth where we grow strong, when we learn to forgive and we right our wrongs. It's here.